This is Scott Perguin of the Stand Independent News Service in Cottage Grove, Oregon, and I have on the line Alice Slater, who's the New York director of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. We're going to talk today about the issue of weapons in space in general and some recent actions by the Bush administration. Hello, Alice.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm delighted to be with you.
Okay, thank you very much for spending time with us on this issue, which I think, giving the all the stuff that's going on in the world, this is one that, unfortunately, a lot of people are not paying attention to.
Well, they're intimately connected.
Mm-hmm.
They're inextricably linked. I mean, if we look at the nuclear proliferation and the missile proliferation, that is also tied to the space warfare that we're planning to wage, and we have actually been on this path for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even during the Clinton administration, the U.S. Space Command had their mission statement, Vision 2020, that talked about dominating, controlling the military use of space to protect U.S. interests and investments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they weren't even embarrassed to say it was to protect our corporate interests. And then, every year in the last 3 or 4 years at the United Nations, Russia and China have been proposing and pushing very strongly for a treaty to prevent an arms race in outer space. And practically every country in the world votes for it. Some abstain, but last year there was only 2 negative votes from the United States and Israel that we don't want to agree not to put weapons in space.
Okay.
So what we have now is, you know, I think if the Bush administration is driving us towards Armageddon, they couldn't have done a better job because they've restated their policy. It's very clear that they're going to dominate space, that they're not going to allow anybody to take over anything from us in space. Meanwhile, in the UN, they won't agree to keep weapons out of space. They won't put their words, you know, their money where their mouth is. And this is in the middle of the North Korean nuclear tests and the Iranian plans to enrich their uranium, which could give them the capacity to build a bomb. So they're all connected because at the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is the 1970 treaty that we all signed, where the 5 then nuclear weapon states promised to give up their nuclear weapons if everybody in the world promise not to get them.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody signed that treaty except for India, Pakistan, and Israel. So India argued it was discriminatory, that there should be no nuclear weapons for anyone. And then it was supposed to expire in 1995. It was a 25-year deal. The parties agreed to come back and see how they were doing. And there was a lot of pressure to get more promises of disarmament from the nuclear weapon states because by that time there were like 30,000 weapons on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get the treaty extended indefinitely, a lot of promises were made, including systematic and progressive efforts for nuclear disarmament, a nuclear weapons-free zone, and weapons of mass destruction-free zone in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
These were the promises that we made in order to get everybody to sign on again. Plus these 5-year reviews with teeth, and in the 2000 review, Clinton promised to maintain the strategic stability of the anti-ballistic missile treaty. That was going to be a deal breaker for China and Russia because they do not want to start trying to catch up to us in space.
Mm-hmm.
And the anti-ballistic missiles, we had an agreement with Russia, we won't build an anti-missile system if you don't, and this way there was no race, and it just left us at a point where we could start cutting back on our nuclear weapons. Now, today, there are 27,000 nuclear weapons on the planet, and 26,000 of them are sitting in the U.S. and Russia. And Putin has an offer on the table to go to 1,500 or even less to us, which we have ignored. China keeps calling for a treaty to eliminate nuclear weapons, which we never take them up on. So if we were to have good leadership in America, we could absolutely defuse all these crises by taking Russia up on their offer, getting the U.S. and Russian arsenals down, calling all the other nuclear weapon states into the negotiations, including our latest entry, North Korea, and promising not to weaponize space, because if we're going to tell everybody that we're going to have space domination, then they're going to want to have their nuclear weapons, you know, as their hedge against us. So we put ourselves in a very bad position.
Okay, so you said that, basically my understanding, and I do remember that the weapons in space and even somewhat before that, the system to the anti-missile system from satellites and all that, space wars, I guess they call
right.
it, right?
Star Wars.
Star Wars, that's it. That started in the Clinton, or even before the Clinton administration.
It started with Reagan. It was his dream. I mean, he really blew it, because when the Cold War ended and the wall fell, he and Gorbachev met, and they agreed that they could get rid of all the nuclear weapons, which would have stopped the proliferation we've seen in India, Pakistan, now North Korea, and who knows what Iran has, you know, in their mind, where they want to enrich uranium, which gives them nuclear power. But as we've learned, to our sad disgust, every nuclear power plant is a bomb factory. I mean, that's how all these other countries got their nuclear weapons. So Gorbachev said, let's go to zero nuclear weapons. Reagan said, great idea. Then Gorbachev said, but no space weapons, no Star Wars, they were calling it then.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan said, oh no, we're going to do that. We have to do that. And then Gorbachev pulled the deal off the table.
So obviously the Bush administration is still into this, again, so-called Star Wars system. That was one of the original sort of
It started
treaty.
With Reagan.
Right.
Clinton is not to be given credit because he kept funding them.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the Rumsfeld Commission. That was just before Bush got elected. Donald Rumsfeld chaired this commission that talked about, maintaining our space superiority and being able to dominate the Earth. Then Rumsfeld came in as defense secretary and put it on a fast track, much faster than Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing is being driven by money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Boeing and Lockheed Martin, there's tens of millions of dollars being given in campaign contributions. You know, the Congress has been corrupted by it. They build these things in every state in America, so every member of Congress has a stake in it. I mean, Hillary Clinton in New York gave Bush the margin of victory on a vote. Everybody thinks she's so progressive. Well, there was a vote that the Democrats tried to push that they wouldn't continue to fund this anti-ballistic missile defense until there was some evidence that what they had already was working, because the irony is it doesn't even work. I mean, if we're spending $11 billion this year, and we really haven't had successful tests where you can hit a missile with a missile flying at thousands of miles an hour, you know, over thousands of miles of distance. And what they tell us, I mean, there's this Ted Postel, this scientist up at MIT, is an expert, that any country that would want to defeat a missile that's supposed to hone in on a missile would shoot it out with lots of decoys, and you don't know which is the decoy and which is the real one. So there's no way that we can really protect ourselves, which they're talking about. This should protect us from an incoming nuclear weapon. I mean, if somebody wants to shoot a nuclear weapon, they'd shoot it on a missile with, you know, hundreds of decoys, and our anti-missile defense would get us nowhere. I mean, it couldn't find it. It hasn't been able to find it in all the tests so far. So the Democrats, to their credit, about 2 years ago, tried to slow it down, particularly in terms of where our budget is going. I mean, our deficit is, we have a screaming deficit, and China owns all our notes, you know. So there were six Democrats that helped to push it along, and Hillary Clinton was one of them, and she's just so proud how she got military contracts for Long Island and New York State, and talks about all the good she's doing for the state. So we have a real problem here. I mean, General Eisenhower was right when he talked about the military-industrial complex. He warned us about it. He was the general that won World War II in the European theater. And that speech is very interesting, because in the same speech where that's always quoted about beware of the military-industrial complex, he also talked about a scientific, technological elite that civil society has to keep an eye on them. So this is being driven by the weapons labs, and combined with corporate interests and money, and You know, I mean, Americans are just suckers in a way. We don't even know what's going on.
Well, could you, Alice, put this in context for us, in some context? I mean, we have reports of U.S. Fleet of some kind steaming towards the Gulf of Hormuz near Iran. And so there's kind of in the air this threat of some kind of military action against Iran, who the Bush administration is claiming are trying to get a nuclear weapon. And how does this fit into that context? It seems like what we have here is a Bush administration that likes to warn the world that they shouldn't step over a certain line while we are way, way, way past that line ourselves.
Exactly. I mean, how can we have any moral authority to tell Iran not to enrich uranium, to tell North Korea don't test them? We didn't sign the test ban. We are developing new nuclear weapons as if our 26,000 old ones aren't good enough. I mean, we're spending $8.3 billion a year on new nuclear weapons research in this country. For what? I mean, they're totally unusable. It's the most immoral weapon. And does it give us security? Absolutely not, because the longer we keep them, the more countries are going to get them, the more the materials they're pushing ahead with this nuclear power renaissance. I mean, so now you're going to have all this nuclear material floating around, which is the hardest thing to get to make a nuclear bomb. I mean, anybody now can make a nuclear bomb.
Mm-hmm.
The designs are on the internet. What's hard about it is getting the material out of a reactor.
Mm-hmm.
That's also the good news, because you can't hide this in the basement. Everybody knows what everybody's doing, so mm-hmm. It would be very easy to verify, you know, that we're acting in good faith. If the world actually said, let's give them up, we could inspect, we would know from our satellite pictures. That's another reason you don't want weapons in space. We depend all the time on our peaceful uses of space, the communications, the global positioning satellites. Why would we want some kind of attack plan up there? I mean, that would be awful for us.
Are we seeing perhaps in the future a more obvious blending of military hegemony and economics? I mean, if we've got, I'm totally speculating here, but as you mentioned, we've got China that holds a lot of notes in our deficit, related to our deficit. I think even places like Saudi Arabia hold a lot of that. So if we've got weapons in space and this military, dominance, we can say don't mess with our money, or...
I don't know. I mean, it's really hard as an American to think that there's that kind of insanity going mm-hmm. on in our own government. But I've looked at the definition of fascism in the dictionary, and it's an undue partnership between military and corporate power, and I think that we've stepped over the line here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by having a completely Republican Congress and a Republican president, there's no checks or balances on the excesses of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I hope in November we can get a breather. That doesn't mean we have to rest, because there's so much money floating around on this
mm-hmm.
From these military contractors that everybody's on the take. I mean, almost everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So then we still have to, you know, be persistent. But as a friend of mine once said, I mean, if we get a Democratic majority, we'll just have a kinder, gentler empire. I mean, it's not as if they have a different worldview. And basically, it's almost like a breakdown of an outdated 20th century hierarchical, patriarchal system to think that we can control everything. In other words, just leave it to us. We'll have everything under control, you know, and then we'll all have a good life in America. But it's out of control. The nuclear materials are out of control. I mean, we have to phase out nuclear power. We can't tell Iran, you can't, you know, enrich your uranium, but Japan can, and Brazil just started a month ago. Nobody's saying anything about Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about North Korea's nuclear test, but we're doing these subcritical tests at the test site where we're blowing up plutonium with high explosives. And because it doesn't have a chain reaction, this was Clinton's deal with the Dr. Strangelove's in the weapons labs. He said, well, it's not like a test, you know, as if I'm not inhaling, I'm not having sex, I'm not testing. But meanwhile, we've had 24 blow-ups of plutonium 1,000 feet below the desert floor. That's part of what they're calling subcritical tests. So we have, there's a concept in the law that you can't come before the court without clean hands. I mean, we don't have clean hands. We've lost our moral authority in this latest thing with the habeas corpus. I mean, this is a right that the nobles won from the king in 1215, I think, and now here we are. It's unbelievable to me in America that we would throw somebody in a lockup, with throw away the key, no charges, no evidence. They could be there forever without knowing why they're there. It's like the gulag. So we have a serious problem in America. I mean, I think people really have to get out and get involved in government and make sure that they're holding their elected officials accountable, or else throwing them out, you know, changing the order.
Well, it seems like any serious look at the situation we're in, and regardless of even if one agrees with certain policies, you know, nuclear policies, war policies, policies in terms of detainment of so-called enemy combatants, whatever, if you seriously look at our system right now, you have to, I think, have to agree that the checks and balances are gone.
Right.
And that that in and of itself, again, regardless of your political view on any issue, should send off huge alarm bells that we are... Well, if nothing else, if you're from the right, you should be able to look at that and go, whoa, what if this stayed in power, stayed in process, and we got a Democrat back in, you know, somebody on the left, as they would say, what would or could they do? So I, you know, this is somewhat off the subject, although obviously very directly connected.
Well, it's related, because we're really at a very critical time in American history. You now have a president that threw down the gauntlet. It's out there. We all know about it. I mean, it used to be just policy wonks like us and, you know, activists, experts that knew what this horrible space policy was. But now it's on the front page of the Washington Post. Here it is. Here's my stand. I'm going to dominate space. Nobody's going to be able to attack American assets, and we reserve the right to attack anybody that's in our way up there. I mean, it's so belligerent and bellicose. Basically, it's the kind of language we've been getting from Bush that got us into Iraq, that how he's confronted North Korea. I mean, North Korea, this is an armistice that was signed in 1953 that's never been settled, and North Korea wanted us to negotiate with them and recognize them as a nation, and whatever you think of the dictator there, I mean, we had nothing to lose.
Right.
We had nothing to lose. As a matter of fact, we're very stymied there, because Japan, China, and South Korea, that are all on the border of North Korea, they're terrified for us to do any kind of military action there because they don't know how they'll handle the, you know, what could happen there, like what's happening in Iraq now that's spilling over into other areas. So we can't really do anything about it, so we should negotiate. But I think, in a way, it's too late to just negotiate the way we should have been doing all along. I mean, at this point, I really think we're going to have to make a grand gesture for the United States. I don't know if Bush is capable of it, but to say, look, it's time for everybody to give up their nuclear weapons.
Right.
And we would be at a much more secure, I mean, like from a realpolitik point of view, we'd have a military advantage if that were to occur, because we're much more threatened by somebody's nuclear weapon than anything else they can field against us.
Right. Right. Well, a somewhat different subject, but again, not really. I would be interested in your comments on what some people have described as really a nuclear war going on in Iraq, or wherever depleted uranium is used.
This is like an outrage. It's like so immoral. First of all, we had reports of this after the 91, the first Gulf War, from our own veterans. As a matter of fact, there's a book, Medal of Dishonor, and I wrote a chapter in it, and I was part of this symposium that was organized based on the reports we were getting from our own Gulf War vets that were coming home with, they called it Gulf War syndrome, but it was radiation poisoning. Their kids were being born with birth defects. They themselves were having higher incidences of cancer and leukemia. And then we used this depleted uranium in ammunition and to shield our tanks, because it's a very hard penetrating metal, or protective in a tank. It's very hard and repels, you know, but when it explodes, it aerosols, and particles of uranium, just called, it's called depleted uranium. The uranium is not depleted. This is like the waste metal containing uranium from the reprocessing we were doing for making bombs, you know. And so now it aerosols, it goes into the air. So we have reports back from Serbia. We use them in Kosovo. And I've heard Iraqi doctors come to America pleading with us to get on Nuitide to stop using it. I mean, this, what kind of a country are we becoming?
Right. And you suppose just the term depleted uranium is one of those euphemisms that allows us to somehow mentally accept it easier than if it was just called a uranium weapon or a nuclear weapon,
or a
for
nuclear
that matter.
Weapon.
Right.
You know, and of course, those of us that have been trying to get rid of nuclear weapons, you know, the ones that destroy cities in one blow. You know, we're a little reluctant to call it a nuclear weapon because, you know, nuclear weapon has a certain level of horror. I mean, when you think that, you know, they keep telling about how small North Korea's explosion was, but it's probably almost equivalent to what we used on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Right. Okay. Well, there are rumors, and I think there's been internal documents in the Bush administration that they've are seriously considering, at least certainly it's on the table, to possibly use the so-called, another euphemism, strategic nuclear weapons on Iran. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I can't imagine it. If they are, then we're just like lemmings. We're being suicidal because it's like the chickens are going to come home to roost, you know. I mean, when we went into Iraq, we dropped a rock on a hornet's nest. And, we still haven't seen what the blowback is going to be. Even Afghanistan was a terrible mistake. I thought at that time we should have sent in special forces, find the guy in his cave, arrest him and bring him to trial and show what America's made of, you know. I mean, instead we started bombing the whole country and now they're going down the tube.
Right, right. Yes.
So it's very 20th century. It just doesn't work in this interconnected century where everybody has the knowledge, where people can operate beyond states. I mean, you have not state actors. Who's your military for? I mean, it's not like armies line up against countries anymore. You have, you know, wild cards.
Right.
We have to really shift our whole way of relating to people.
So where is the optimism in all this? This is all fairly overwhelming. But
no, the optimism is, you know, that the Chinese say that crisis and opportunity are made of the same. I think the optimism is that people are going to wake up from our coma in America. I mean, we've had this corporate media where they're not getting the information, but now it's sort of filtering through. I hope they get it straight, you know. And take action as citizens. We have all the solutions. We have offers to get rid of nuclear weapons. We have extraordinary potential for sustainable energy that we do not need nuclear power. We have enough sun and wind and hydro and geothermal. I mean, the country of Iceland by 2050 is going to be completely clean energy from geothermal and hydro. I mean, we should not be buying oil anymore. We got this whole global warming crisis, you know. So it's like they're all, and now the industry is trying to sell us nuclear power as the answer, which it's not. I mean, there's money, fossil fuel costs associated with nuclear power. This is just like industry hype that nuclear is clean. And then if they can't do that, they're going to sell us ethanol made out of corn, like we're going to grow food to burn it. And I thought about this. Why is this thing taking off? And this former CIA head, James Woolsey, he's been at three energy meetings I went to talking about ethanol. Ethanol is the answer of the future. It's because they can sell it.
Right.
You can't sell the sun or the wind or the tides or the geothermal heat energy that comes up from the earth. As a matter of fact, we could probably have the greatest effect if we got behind that, like a Manhattan Project for energy or a man on the moon, like Kennedy said, we're going to go to the moon in 10 years. I mean, if we could get back our American spirit and do something like that, we would be able to end poverty on the planet because everybody could access free energy in these poor countries if we could, you know, develop the technology to harness the sun in a meaningful way where everybody can get it. And it's all there. I mean, we have the blueprints. There's just no commitment because the old structures of the 20th century, you know, the fossil fuel and nuclear fuel industries are, you know, fighting for their life. So they don't want to give it up because they lose their cash cow.
Right. And it seems like in our hallowed U.S. constitutional system, of course, there's the breakdowns we've already been talking about, but that we are somehow trapped in this two-party system that's not allowing enough room for creativity and/or debate on these issues.
Here in New York, I mean, the Democrat Hillary Clinton and the Republican, whose name I can't even remember that she's running against, refused to have a debate with the Green candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And during the primary period, she refused to debate our progressive Democratic candidate that was running in New York, Jonathan Cecchini, who got 40,000 signatures to get him on the ballot. I mean, he was already like at 10 or 12% in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't just a minor candidate.
Right,
it was a major effort by the whole peace movement to get a Senate opponent to Hillary, who has been a war supporter all along and recently voted, just in case anybody thinks they like her for president, she recently voted against an amendment that was submitted by Patrick Leahy and Dianne Feinstein to prevent the use of cluster bombs in civilian populated areas in Iraq. These cluster bombs that we're using, they drop all these little bomblets that are like the size of a can of fruit cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
The kids pick them up and blow off their arms and legs, I mean, and die.
Right.
And she voted against that amendment. I mean, you know, she wants to out-macho the guys. And macho is not the answer now.
Right.
We really have to balance some of that energy. We have to be more cooperative and figure out ways, you know, negotiations and talking.
Mm-hmm.
I always love to quote Winston Churchill. He said, "It's better to have jaw-jaw than war-war." And I mean, that's what we should be doing in North Korea with Iran. I mean, they wanted to talk to us. We haven't talked to them either since the whole hostage crisis.
Right.
We haven't had direct talk.
Well, negotiation is obviously not the strong suit of the Bush administration. We're getting near time to wrap up here, and I want to bring us back to what kind of got us started on this, and that's, I was remiss that I didn't mention this at the beginning, but basically there was a lead story in the Washington Post yesterday, I believe, that President Bush had signed a new national space policy that rejects future arms control agreements. It's just rejecting the possibility of arms control agreements even before you get out the chute is pretty incredible.
Well, I think we did talk about it, because to me that was like the blatant acknowledgement of something that has been the policy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's been upsetting everybody else in the world. But now he's like laying it on the table and putting it out there. So, in a sense, the ball's in the court of the American people now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not some secret policy. It's public. And we have to we should make every candidate answer whether they are willing to support a treaty to ban weapons in space. I mean, that should be part of the debate going into November election, if you've got somebody running for the Senate or the Congress, because we're going to have to restore the balance in the Congress.
Right.
You know.
Well, as one of my friends, a family actually, it's a military family, and military families speak out, or they like to say it's time for us to take our country back.
Exactly. And I hope we wake up to this. You know, it's hard, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Right. Well, I appreciate your work and, of course, spending time with us here today and speaking to us on this issue, the nuclear issue, the space issue, the world domination issue. Good luck in your work, and thank you for your work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Allison. Have a great day out there in New York.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
I was speaking with Alice Slater, who is the New York director of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. You can get more information on this issue at their website, which is wagingpeace.org. That's WAGINGPEACE.org. You can also get more information on this issue from Institute for Public Accuracy at www.accuracy.org. That's www.accuracy.org. This is Scott Bergwin with the Stand Independent News Service in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We'll talk to you next time.